The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to this week's episode of Zach on Film. Joining me this week, of course, Stephen Schleicher.
Hello, Zach.
Hey, Stephen. So we're back. We're wrapping up the Something of 69
yeah,
this
we are.
Week. Yeah. Last week we talked a little about Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
And this week we're going to jump back into a pretty well-known Western, I'm mm-hmm. guessing. I mean, I've
some people say it's their favorite Western.
Yeah, that was interesting reading after I watched this film. It seems like people have kind of differing opinions on how great this
mm-hmm.
movie is.
Mm-hmm.
But we've watched a movie by the director, of course.
Yeah, Sergio Leone.
Sergio Leone. We watched The Good, the Bad, and Ugly,
mm-hmm.
which was what is the trilogy name? Man with No Name.
Mm-hmm.
With Clint Eastwood.
Right.
We watched that, which came out 2 years before.
Right.
Once Upon a Time in the West.
Right.
And
yeah, so
I was pretty
he was, I mean,
excited.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was so popular. He basically
yeah.
had his choice to do anything he wanted. And he wanted to go and do, if I'm not mistaken, he wanted to do Once Upon a Time in America, which he eventually did.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the money people were just throwing buckets of dough at him and was just like, do another Western. And so he had this idea kicking around. And so he and this other guy wrote it up, and it's Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah. So what we have again is kind of like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is this, I would guess, say an epic level Western tale. I mean, just in time, it stretches 2 hours and 55 minutes. Not the longest film we've watched on Zach on Film. There's about three others that are longer. Like Ben-Hur, what else did we,
Lawrence of Arabia
is the longest, is the longest movie I think ever.
Terrence Malick movie.
That movie's actually not that long. It just feels super long. It's really not that long.
Yeah.
But it's a movie of pretty big scope in a sense. I think compared to some things we've watched in this little chunk of
mm-hmm.
mainly Westerns that we've watched. And so it was. I think it was a good one to end on because I think theme-wise, it hit upon a lot of what we've seen in 69, which
mm-hmm.
I continue to find very fascinating because Once Upon a Time in the West still hits on that theme of the cowboys are done. Like, we're transitioning.
Yeah.
We're getting run out.
Right.
There's railroads. There's all these money people.
Mm-hmm.
Having a gun doesn't really make you the most powerful person anymore.
Well, I mean,
In this movie, it kind of does, but
right.
they all acknowledge our time
yeah.
is done. It's just money now.
That's what I like about this. You know, it's like, it could just be Once Upon a Time, .. right? Because,
yeah.
you know, that's how all fairy tales start. So this is when we're looking at, all these four Westerns that we kind of looked at this
mm-hmm.
year, unintentional Westerns,
yeah.
even with Midnight Cowboy and Easy Rider. This is by far the most, well, maybe not the most romanticized, but it is the most, as you said, epic tale
mm-hmm.
of what people think the West is about. And in this case, it is about land ownership and the railroad coming through. And whoever has the land, especially in this one place, as we reveal at the end, where there's water, this is the place where the train's coming through. And there was someone forward thinking enough to buy all the land in the area so that when the railroad comes through, he's going to build this huge city and it's going to be this big space,
mm-hmm.
Sweetwater. And he's going to be rich. He's going to be a rich landowner, a rich city founder and all this stuff. And so it's a brilliant idea. But along the way, the landowner's facing all these obstacles because he has to have his town built before the railroad gets there.
Right.
That's one of the provisions for him to have gotten the land. And of course, the railroad people don't like that, and they want the land for themselves so that they can claim this watering hole. And so they've got some evil hired guns out to kill the landowner.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, the landowner also hires his own gun to come and protect him. Now, unfortunately, the way this movie starts is the landowner dies in the first, 20 minutes of the
film.
So
fast.
which means that not only that, but we kill the children too, which mm-hmm. was very shocking, right?
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, a woman shows up who had married this landowner, and now she's in charge of this. She owns this big scrub patch of essentially desert.
Right.
And the gunslinger shows up to protect the home. And then we find out there's all these other bad guys that are involved, these other highwaymen, these robbers. And they all kind of decide to work together to get to the epic conclusion
mm-hmm.
and defeat the railroad and his cronies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is a really good, like, really condensed description of what this movie is,
right,
because
but if you take out all the big long pause parts in this movie, that's about how long the movie runs.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, is it is a movie, and I guess I probably forgot from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, because we watched mm-hmm. that so long ago,
mm-hmm.
that Leone is not afraid of drawing out every minute action.
I mean, the opening sequence, I think it's like 10 minutes or something, five,
it's
10 minutes.
It's incredibly long.
It is really long. So we open up on this very dusty train station. I mean, it's desolate. It's in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, the building doesn't have walls or you know, really a roof. And there's this old timer guy doing tickets. And these three guys show up in their dusters and their cowboy hats. And you can tell they're waiting for something or for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And they spread out across the train platform, which is really long for this train station in the middle of nowhere. But you know they're waiting, and there's a windmill that's just creaking, 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 and one of the gunslingers is sitting underneath the water tower, and suddenly it starts dripping on his head, and the fly is buzzing, is bothering another
guy.
It's
like a 3-minute scene of a dude just trying to a fly off of his face.
Yeah. And it just keeps building and building and building. It's like, what are they waiting for? It must be something big. And then they hear the train come in,
mm-hmm.
and a few people get off, and they suddenly disappear. And then they're like, well, where's this guy that we're looking for? And then the train pulls away and we start to hear this harmonica play. And mm-hmm. there is harmonica.
Our hero.
Our hero. And again, I think the interesting thing is throughout the entire film, we don't know Harmonica's name, who's played by
Charles Bronson. Yeah.
It's kind of like the man with no name. So mm-hmm. here is this mythical hero coming to save the day, just like we see in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And they're standing there and we get another couple of minutes of these guys just doing a showdown of, you know, who sent you, who are you,
mm-hmm.
and then gunshots, pow, 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 like in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And the fight is over, and everybody's down, but then Harmonica gets up. He's only been shot in the arm. He's okay.
He's fine.
And everyone else is dead. And then he goes off on his thing, and that's the opening part of this movie, which is like, whoa, how weird is that? I mean, this movie's going to be awesome if you've drawn out that point for as long as you have.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the film isn't as fantastic from that point forward. I mean, there are some parts that I think some characters need to be developed a little bit further, like the Jason Robards character, which when you see Jason Robards, many people know him from Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is one of my favorite movies. And Jason mm-hmm. Robards is great as the old father in this. But here he just plays an outlaw who's been kidnapped or who's been arrested. And they're going to send him on the train mm-hmm. back to Yuma, and he escapes. And he and his team are like, someone's killing in my name, and that ain't right. So we're going to get down to the bottom of this. And Jason Robards' character is great. And Charles Bronson's character is great. And they eventually team up to help this widow protect her land.
Mm-hmm.
But then we find out who the real bad guy is. And
this
is a great turn of force for this movie. And this is the main reason I think everyone should watch this movie, is Henry Fonda plays Frank,
mm-hmm.
the bad,
real
guy.
Bad guy.
Yeah, the real bad guy hired by the railroad tycoon. And this guy is the worst. I mean,
so bad.
He shoots children. I mean, he shoots children like point blank.
Yeah.
Kills a kid in the opening scene.
No conscience.
There's this extended rape scene that comes off more as a seduction scene. It's the swinging bed stuff, you know, when they kidnap her and they're trying to convince her that she needs to sell.
Oh, yeah.
That's an extended rape scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, Henry Fonda is just pure evil in this
mm-hmm.
movie. I mean, he is evil. And most people know him as this good guy, as this really nice good guy actor who always plays the good guy in the movies. But here it's flipped around and he can play bad like the best of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that his portrayal as the bad guy is probably the best part of this movie. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. His character was really good in the worst of the ways.
Oh yeah,
and especially because Peter Fonda playing that character is such out of character for him, essentially, mm-hmm. in what he's been doing before this, and that was, gosh, and that was part of my problem for this movie. Was that there was just enough characters
mm-hmm.
who looked just enough alike.
In some places,
that it
yeah.
took me some, like, okay, wait, hold on. They're all in the room now. They can't all obviously be the same person.
Right, right.
So let's figure this out.
Yeah.
Because there are, like, there's the train sequence where I think all three of those guys are in, or at least they're in the same space, right?
At the train station, but they're yeah. all dead after he's killed.
Well, I thought Fonda and Bronson... And Jason Robards were when there's that thing where, like, isn't it Robards that's jumping in and out of the windows and flushing the toilet on top of the train? Mm-hmm, and then isn't mm-hmm. Harmonica in that scene too?
Yeah, he is. He's tied up.
Yeah.
That was a really good action sequence on the train. Really good where Harmonica has been captured
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to ride on, but Robards in a change of heart has decided to help him. And there's this big shootout going on top of the train, inside the train. It's really good. It's very solid. And, you know, you think some of that, you're thinking, oh, is that rear screen projection?
Mm-hmm.
Some of it maybe is, but some of it is, like, maybe too on the nose that they might be actually shooting out the train to the riders in the background, because too many things timed out too perfectly.
It was so good, and, like, I don't remember. It was 69, so it's not,
it's
like,
probably rear projection.
It probably was, but it's like, it looked...
Now, the scenes with Robards actually hanging off the train and shooting inside and blowing up people, that's mm-hmm. got to be mm-hmm. rear screen projection. But it's so good. That is a very good action sequence. There is a very tense, interesting sequence where, so the way this is the rumor has gotten out that the people who have killed, the gang that has killed the landowner and his family
mm-hmm.
is Jason Robards' gang. And
right.
of course, Jason Robards is like, not my gang, because they wouldn't have done it without my orders, and I don't kill kids.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, I've been handcuffed this entire time.
Right.
And there's a great scene inside of this bar and this trading post in the middle of nowhere, which is just, the setting is so cool. It kind of reminded me of Quentin Tarantino's movie that we just saw last year.
Hateful Eight.
Yeah, Hateful Eight, mm-hmm. where they're just in this trading post, and all this action is going on in the trading post where it's very tense. Is Robards going to kill everyone in here? What's he going to do? Why is Harmonica teasing him? Why is he pushing him mm-hmm. to his limit? Who is this mysterious character? It's very intense. So that's a great scene. And then you get a scene where towards the end of the movie, the railroad tycoon has had it with Henry Fonda's character, and basically is paying off the rest of Frank's gang to go and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really cool shootout scene that takes place in the town where Henry Fonda is just like, oh, where are these people that are trying to kill me, and who's going to help me and who's not going to help me? And it's just very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's neat. And then throughout the entire piece, we hear this harmonica playing, the harmonica actually playing this harmonica that's been beat up and everything. And we don't know his story. We don't know why he is chasing Frank.
Yeah,
we don't know why he's intent on killing Frank.
Yeah, it's very mysterious in... It really is kind of like Clint Eastwood's
mm-hmm.
character, especially if you watch Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, because that's the last one in the Fist,
right.
The Man with No Name trilogy. Mm-hmm. You really have, like, no idea who this dude is,
right.
where he's coming from, why he's so kick-ass. And then Harmonica's very the same way, because he has that cool, he, like, plays his own entrance music mm-hmm. all the time, which is a really great thing.
I like how you say that. It's his own entrance
music. Yeah, it's wonderful, because it has... A somewhat of a creepy vibe, because it is this harmonica out in, like, the middle of the desert, and it's, like, mm-hmm. no one around. It's like, it'd be really weird if you're just all of a sudden like, oh, crap, there's a harmonica.
Well,
what
and
the
it's
heck?
Interesting, too, because as, you know, with the Maricone
mm-hmm.
or Maricone soundtrack, you almost think, and this goes into diegetic and non-diegetic sound, is the harmonica part of the soundtrack when you first hear it? And oftentimes when you hear it, you're like, is it part of the soundtrack, or is that something that everyone is hearing? And then, it's revealed that, here's this harmonica
mm-hmm.
Guy, and he's playing it. And you're like, what's his story? And so you're following that throughout the piece until you find out at the end that as a young child, Frank, Henry Fonda's character, killed his brother mm-hmm. by putting his brother to stand on top of Harmonica's shoulders with a noose around his neck
mm-hmm.
and basically said, you're going to stand there until you fall and you're going to kill your brother. And he's like, here's a harmonica, and shoves it in the kid's mouth,
mm-hmm.
which causes him to lose his balance and fall because his hands are tied behind his back, which kills his brother, and his dad's already dead. And so this is a revenge story from Harmonica's standpoint at the end when they finally have a shootout together.
And for me, that sequence, the entire last shootout sequence, which we get this flashback in the middle of, is the best moment of the film, because you have this mm-hmm. whole
it's
chase
been
has been going
that.
This
yeah.
whole time. You have really no idea why they're going. This is finally like, all right, you get to that moment. I was like, oh, I bet we're going to have Good, the Bad, and the Ugly shoot at the
mm-hmm.
end, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the guys are getting ready, and they're like spinning their guns and like chucking it and all doing all sorts of cowboy stuff. And then you get this great flashback where, you know, you get him shoving the harmonica into his mouth, and he's mm-hmm. like trying so hard to keep his brother alive, because I mean, if you just stand there forever,
his
brother's gonna be fine.
Yeah,
obviously that's like not gonna be possible,
right? Because he's already standing on his toes trying to keep his brother high enough so that he's not choking to death,
right? And so, man, and that was just such a good moment, and it played out perfectly, because you get all of the good lead up Leone's stuff, and then you break it when it's just about to go too long. It's like, they should just be shooting each other mm-hmm. already. You get a good flashback. I mean, again, it takes a couple of minutes, but it works so well to kind of set up why these people hate each other, or especially why Harmonica hates him, and you come back and boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. And then, you know, the thing we haven't talked about is Jill McBain, who has arrived into town. She's the former prostitute
mm-hmm.
who has come here. She married this guy and has come here she thinks he's the richest man around. And she comes here, and he's in the middle. I mean, the house is nice. It's a big house. But it's the middle of nowhere. And she's like, oh, my gosh. She comes the day of the funeral of the whole family. And then she spends the night kind of tearing the place apart, looking for all this money. She's like, what have I gotten into? And she's ready to just turn around and go home.
Mm-hmm.
And people convince her to stay, that it's important that you stay because this land is important for something. And then as the story builds out, we find out it's because of the water rights, which is really, I mean, the water rights as
it's
the
so
core
weird.
Part of this story. Is like mind blowing, right?
What?
Usually it's like, oh, there's an old gold mine that no one knows about.
That's
or
what they
there's
were doing
oil
at first.
Under the ground.
It's like, obviously this dude has some stash of money and that's why they killed him. It's like all tearing through the house and trying to find everything and they can't find it. Wasn't that Chinatown over water rights?
Chinatown was over water rights. Yeah.
I was like, that's something I've seen before that has like a weird premise. Like, it's a really great movie. It's like, what? Water? Yeah. Whatever.
Well, I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere.
It's a big deal. You need water.
People need water. The trains need water in order to move. That's how their boilers work.
Yeah.
And so she just wants to get out, and she wants to get as much money as she can. And of course, the railroad doesn't want to pay hardly any money. So they basically coerce her into selling her property cheap. And by doing this, you know, Henry Fonda's character kidnaps her, and it is a rape scene. I mean, it's like it's a love scene, supposedly, in this really weird bed that's swinging from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically telling her, hey, if you want to live, you're going to do what I tell you to do, which mm-hmm. includes sex and also selling the land for like 50 bucks or 100 bucks or something.
Yeah.
Which, you know, even the town sheriff is like, I really don't feel comfortable selling it at this piece.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Frank. You know, the head of the railroad that he's working with is a guy that has had, polio, I mm-hmm. think, or tuberculosis or something. Basically, he's basically not paralyzed from the neck down because he can move, but he can't walk very easily.
No.
And so he's got this elaborate rig inside the train to where he's hanging on to things so he can walk around. He's using crutches. And Frank just sees him as a nobody, even though he's known him basically his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he plots to buy the land so he can get rich mm-hmm. and sell it to the railroad, because his friend that he's known since they came over on the ship together, his friend's been rich all the time and he's had nothing. And it feels like this is his turn to turn it around. And that at which point the owner of the railroad, Morton, is like, mm-hmm. no, go kill him. Get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just such a dynamic, cool story.
That scene of Frank trying to get her to sell the land at a really cheap price is really great, because everyone's like, this is insane. Like, why would you sell the land so cheap?
Yeah.
And then in comes Harmonica's like, boom, $5,000. And like, someone kill him right now.
Yeah.
They were so mad.
Frank's like, kill him. Because Frank's shown up with all of his posse people. And every time someone gets ready to bid on it,
mm-hmm.
someone's pushing them down and saying, you don't need to bid. You don't. It's like really rigged. And the only way that Harmonica has $5,000 is Jason Robards' character, Cheyenne, has a bounty out on him.
Mm-hmm.
And Harmonica's like, I'm turning this man in. I want my reward. And that's how I'm going to pay for this land.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really clear if the sale was ever completed. I mean, you know, because technically Harmonica owns the land and not McBain's wife. McBain. Every time I hear that, I think McBain from Simpsons.
What are you talking about?
He's the Arnold Schwarzenegger character. Oh, okay. McBain. But at one point, Cheyenne, before this auction takes place, I know we're jumping all over in the story, but before the auction takes place, Cheyenne and Harmonica are out there, and this huge delivery has been made of wood and nails and all these things.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, Mrs. McBain can't figure out what it's all for. But then we get flashback to the beginning of the movie where she's tearing the house apart looking for stuff. She keeps coming across all these little models, a little church, a little store, a station.
Mm.
That's the model for the town.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find out that, oh, we have to build this town before we have to have a station in place before the railroad gets here. And for some reason, I've conflated this movie with another movie because I could have sworn in another movie. I thought it was this one, but I thought that the railroad was like driving people ahead so fast that they were working super fast and the train was chugging as the builders were trying to build the station as quickly as they can. But apparently that's not in this movie. I must be thinking of something else. Cheyenne gets his boys to start building the station so that, yes, by the time McBain's wife comes back to her homestead and by the time the train is rolling up, station is complete. Yeah, she's got the land. She's going to be very, very rich. And Harmonica has killed Frank, and Cheyenne and Harmonica go to right off in the distance. Except somehow during the gunfight, Cheyenne got shot. I think he actually pulled the trigger and shot Frank.
Oh, interesting.
I think so. I think he helped.
Uh-oh.
That's my theory.
Okay.
Because how else would he get shot? Or no, maybe it's a stray bullet because Frank fires, and then he starts to turn, and then he fires again, I think. And I think there's a stray bullet that hit Cheyenne somehow. I don't know how he got shot and wounded.
I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, jumping around talking about this movie is almost how you have to do it, because I don't understand. This movie is so long.
Yeah, it is.
And you have to, like, talk through a bunch of stuff, and you remember, like, oh, yeah, like, after 8 minutes of, like, watching someone nail something, and then you're like, oh, yeah, this thing happened, and this thing happened, because it's so sprawling,
yeah,
and, like,
there's really
so many, like,
sequences.
Things that weave in and out of each other that really come together at the end that you have to, like, oh, yeah, you have to, like, jog your memory about everything that happened.
The original cut of the movie, 168 minutes long, 2 hours 46 minutes is how long it was originally. They cut that down for the U.S. release to 2 hours and 25 minutes. But the version that you can get now on iTunes, I'm guessing is the version that we watched, is the full 2 hours and 45 minutes, which I call like 5 hours.
Yeah.
It feels like it, just because it's a very slow paced movie.
Yeah. And that's all it is. It's like Leonin gives this space for it to breathe and to just happen. It's not a movie that is wants to really, like, chug ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to take its time to lay out all of these pieces and then just let it happen. And there is something nice about that. It does get very long, and you're kind of wondering, when are we going to get to the next thing?
Right.
But it always does get to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this bad thing and this good thing about the film, because there is something very different about this movie than if you were to watch like a modern Western where it's just, if a modern Western was this long, it would be like impossible to watch because it would be so fast and just trying to do so much. This movie does a lot, but it gives itself enough room to accomplish that. It doesn't hit every note perfectly. There is some character stuff that you wish could be pushed farther or some things that could just be thrown out. But ultimately it does take up that space in a good fashion.
Right. So in the Dollars trilogy, you know, things move very quickly. In this, it moves very slow.
Mm-hmm.
And it is somewhat intentional because we saw in, what was the first one that we watched?
Wild Bunch?
The Wild Bunch, right? That one is talking about, you want to know what violence is like.
Mm-hmm.
Here's violence, right? Mm-hmm. Here's violence. And we will draw the violence out, even shoot it in super slow motion.
Yeah.
Right. In Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, it's like, hey, look how fun it is to be a bad guy. Yeah, air quotes, right?
Air quotes.
In Easy Rider, it's like, well, you can be an outlaw, but, and you can do cool outlaw things, but you kind of have to look and see what's around you, and eventually your quote-unquote crimes are going to catch up with you.
Mm-hmm.
In Midnight Cowboy, it's like, let's take a look at what this idea of cowboy and masculinity really means. In Once Upon a Time in the West, Sergio Leone isn't really interested in showing you violence. He's wanting to show you everything that leads up to violence. Mm-hmm. What are these moments? I mean, think about that opening train station sequence. The moments before someone dies, the minutes before someone dies, maybe the hour before someone dies. What are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they doing something heroic? Are they doing something cool? Are they doing something adventurous? No. One guy's sitting under a water tower with water dripping on his head. Another guy's worried about a fly. The train station guy's been locked into the safe. Nothing exciting. I mean, this is a boring life.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, pow, 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 violence is over, off we go. In the closing sequence, it's almost the same way. Here's this big, long buildup of these guys casually walking, which, you know, really, if someone's going to kill you in this day and age, you just pull out the gun and kill somebody.
Just shoot them right
now.
You
don't agree to let's walk to this side of the house.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, walk at 20 paces. Mm-hmm. Let's have this final conversation with one another. You just get it over with. But Leone seems to be really interested in what's going on before the violence? What led to this? What is going on? So we do have these really long periods of things that seem rather dull, but they're also building that tension in the movie, which makes it super fascinating to mm-hmm. watch, even though it is a little long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's this weird trade-off that you have to go with this movie is, I personally think it's brilliant. This movie is really brilliant in how it executes everything. But I also hate it because it's like, ugh, I got to sit and watch this 3-hour movie again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so long. And it's like, I know what's coming up next. But each time I watch it, I'm like noticing these little other nuanced things that happen with it. So it's, as you said, it's both good and bad in what you get
and
with
ugly.
This movie. Yes.
I think the point
actually,
of it.
I think if I'm not mistaken, I need to go and look. You go ahead and talk because
okay.
I'm almost positive that ugly plays the guy with the white beard on the train that gets shot.
Oh, okay.
I'm almost positive he is in this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, is a nice thing you bring up that Leone shows the lead up to violence, because that's something I guess is a great way to put this entire movie, because that's what makes it so much unlike of current modern action film, because I would mm-hmm. definitely say this is an action film.
Mm-hmm.
But now you get, you know, 4 seconds of backstory, 15-minute fight sequence, 5 seconds to like, oh no, my friend died, another 18 minutes of like slow motion whipped mm-hmm. camera around action. In this, it's you get an hour of exposition and then half a second of someone shooting a gun.
Right.
Which is a really different way of going about, you know, any violence. And it is definitely a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
I would also say that beginning train station battle has one of the best lines in the movie, where Harmonica's talking to the three guys that are sent there to kill him. And I think Harmonica asks, how many horses did you bring?
Oh, right.
And they're like, oh, we brought 3. He goes, that's too many. And it's like, boom, boom, I'm taking your horses.
Yeah. So Eli Wallach, who played Tuco in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, was not in in this movie. But as I'm scrolling through his IMDb page, I cannot believe I didn't know this. He played Mr. Freeze in the Batman TV series in 1966.
Whoa.
Well, actually, in 2 episodes in 1967, but...
Whoa.
Wow. And I've got that entire collection sitting out there that I have not
watched.
Oh, my
gosh. So that they did that in 67.
Yeah.
That was, like, the same time as Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
What a weird transition.
Yeah. Really.
That's wonderful.
So what did you think about... what did you think about we talked about the pacing, and that ties mm-hmm. back into editing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what did you think of shot selection, composition? Because one of the things that I notice is, you know, Sergio Leone knows how to fill a frame. I think mm-hmm. I even tweeted that the night I was watching it a couple of weeks ago, in that oftentimes when we talk about the Sergio Leone shot, we talk about this extreme close-up where the eyes fill the shot. But if you, again, watch that opening sequence or watch the stuff that takes place at the trading post, mm-hmm. you're working with a very wide format, and yet he places things exactly where they need to be mm-hmm. so that your eyes are drawn through the entire shot. And every it's almost like every piece has a purpose for being in there, which you should always do, right?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
We were talking before we started recording about some photography that you did. And even though photography is not video and it's not movies,
yeah.
photography still has the same principles that apply. Mm-hmm. Composition, framing, lighting, exposure, all this stuff has to go into it. And so when you're shooting your shot, you were doing some restaurant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The placement of those plates, the placements of the menus and everything is important in that shot so that you get the message across that you need, so mm-hmm. that you create the mood, the atmosphere, and everything in that one little single frame.
Mm-hmm.
And Leone does that too and just is happy to let the action play out in that wider shot, but it just fills the frame so gloriously that you just got to sit there and marvel
mm-hmm.
at his composition techniques. And you can understand instantly when you watch this movie, and I think this movie more so than The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly or Fistful of Dollars or a few Dollars More. I think watching this movie, I think you really get the sense of why Quentin Tarantino is so enamored
yeah.
with Leone's mm-hmm. work, because this is just like, oh my gosh, just look at how it's set up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so good from the look.
I think watching Leone do this and watch him frame step, I really think that opening train sequence is just mm-hmm. phenomenal.
I would put it down as one of my favorite sequences of all time. I would definitely put it in my top 20 favorite sequences.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was
more so than Indiana Jones. I mean, Indiana Jones stealing the Covenant of the Ark from the Nazi sequence mm-hmm. in Raiders of the Lost Ark is great and is much better than this one. But it's those two movies. I mean, that's mm-hmm. this sequence is in that top 20 favorite sequences.
Yeah, in watching how he just orchestrates this, and especially because the crazy thing is, I still actually haven't watched Hateful Eight. I've mm-hmm. been like super like Quentin Tarantino. It's like I'll get to it when I get
right.
You know, but definitely watching this. And listening to the score, mm-hmm. the composer did the same on this mm-hmm. as Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
He actually won his first Oscar, which was just crazy because it's like his scores for this and Good and Ugly are so good.
I think they were unappreciated at the time because, again, this movie still falls under the category of spaghetti western.
Yeah.
Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, spaghetti western. And it's just this throwaway movie that mm-hmm. no one cares about, but it turns out to be something even bigger than anyone thought.
Right.
And I think that, I think it was just a lot of throwaway stuff. People didn't really give it credit. And to be honest, in the cut version, the edited version that was released in the United States when Once Upon a Time in the West was first released, audiences panned it. Nobody really liked this movie. And again, it wasn't until afterwards that people start to appreciate it. And once certain sequences are added back in, and then, of course, now today when we're able to see not the full director's cut, but we're able to see the original theatrical release of 168, mm-hmm. then you start to really appreciate what is going on here.
Yeah, and I watching Leone work makes me now want to watch Tarantino based on everything you've said on that and what I've read about Hateful Eight, about how he can just put this thing in there because you're shooting it so wide and have this huge frame to work with.
Yeah.
And it's definitely something I want to see now. It's going to be different. Because it's going to be so wide, and then it's going to be like this, but violent of the Wild Bunch, probably turned up to 11 with probably crazy fast editing. Is.
So like, for example, a little bit of a spoiler.
That's fine.
In How the West Was Won, Cheyenne is trying to psych out one of the bad guys that are on the train. Because you think that he's hanging off the side of the train and his boot is hanging in the window and his boot's kind of just tapping into the glass. Awesome. And the guy's like, aha, I've got you now. And he's getting ready to shoot up. But instead, we find out that Cheyenne has really been hanging over upside down with his gun inside the boot. And he pulls the trigger and kills the guy. Mm-hmm. You see a little bit of blood there, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the Hateful Eight, someone gets shot in the head and you see the head explode.
I can only imagine.
And the ending of the movie is just a bloody, violent massacre of everyone killing everyone kind of thing. So you are going to run into that as contrast. But again, when you go and see a Quentin Tarantino movie, you know that it's going to be brilliantly shot, brilliantly edited, but it's also going to be grotesquely violent.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, and by grotesque, I don't mean disgusting or turn off, but just overabundance beyond what you would normally expect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you get in The Hateful Eight. But you watch that opening sequence of the stagecoach coming through this mountain pass in Hateful Eight, and you're just sitting there for that first couple of minutes just going, whoa. And of course, if you watch it on a big screen,
oh yeah,
you even get that impact even more. So it's definitely something I think you should watch.
Yeah, I'm definitely very much more interested in watching it now. And I think it was just like everyone told me, it's like, this is Tarantino's most violent film. I'm like, that's absurd.
Even more so than Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds, watching them like beat people's faces in.
Yeah.
Kill Bill was super violent. And Pulp Fiction was violent. Django was like incredibly violent. Like, I didn't think I could get more than that.
Yeah, but it seems like Quentin Tarantino is just like, you know, just keeps ratcheting it up. Is like, I don't care. You know, I'll just keep doing it until someone tells me it's too much, and then I'll keep doing it. And he's kind of given carte blanche to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I mean,
and so if he wants to have people's heads blowing off, or you know, there's a scene where an old guy's just sitting in a chair, and they just blow him away on the screen. So it's interesting. You really need to watch it. If you like this movie, if you like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, I think you will have a big appreciation for Hateful Eight for what it is. Because it is kind of this homage to the Leone style of Westerns.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is nice watching all of these 60 stuff. Because it's definitely, I mean, as we know, it's Quentin Tarantino. He is just takes styles from different genres and throws them into it.
He steals.
Okay, that's true. He steals it.
He admits that he steals elements and plot points and different things from all these different people.
Yeah, and especially when he makes it visually. And so, you know, watching these beforehand would definitely, you know, make it probably a better experience, because that's essentially what he's trying to do. It's like, it's like watch my film and I'll go watch the 15 films that I took my film from and just put them together. And
it's
then
almost
add
like
another
a condensed,
bucket of blood.
It's like a condensed film school when you watch a Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch him,
it's almost
it
like,
is.
You know, it's like this ties nicely into the conversation that we had last week. And I'm sorry, listeners, if you were expecting a conversation last week about Once Upon a Time in the West. And instead you got a long discussion about how awesome Stranger Things were and how Netflix works and all that television stuff.
But for real, Stranger Things.
But for real, yeah. Stranger Things are awesome. But the nice thing, and we talked about this, the cool thing about Stranger Things is it's this love poem to all these great films of the late 70s and early 80s that these guys are stealing shots. I mean, literally they're stealing shots from. I mean, there's this scene where what's his name? The guy that runs the Institute, Matthew Modine's character, where he's walking and he's putting on this suit. And I think it's in the first episode or second episode where he's putting on this containment suit. And you see he's got something in his pocket or something's jangling around. Well, you watch E.T. and there's a shot in there where Jangly Keys Man, he's not named in the movie, so everyone just calls him Jangly Keys Man. It's an exact shot for that.
Well, I don't remember which one of our listeners tweeted us that video.
Yeah, there's someone a video Vimeo. On Vimeo.
It's like, holy crap. It's like, there's so many shots. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's where that was from. That's where I'm from. And that is Tarantino style. Like, he's unabashed about it. He takes these shots and themes and how he does it. And he just runs with him. And he just makes him more kind of his thing. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely, I mean, he literally took the composer from this movie to do Hateful Eight. Like, it's not much different.
The Stranger Things video is called References to 70s and 80s Movies in Stranger Things. And you can find it on Vimeo. And the nice thing about Vimeo is if the creator allows it, you can actually download those videos in whatever resolution they uploaded it. So I've already downloaded this and I've got it here in HD. So. That's one nice thing about Vimeo. So
good job, Vimeo.
I say watch this movie for no other reason than to see Henry Fonda play the worst villain you have ever seen in your life. And not a mustache twirling villain, not a Bond villain, but someone who is just truly evil. It is a mesmerizing, because he's got these steely blue eyes that everyone knows Henry Fonda for, and he's got this kind face. But he is evil, and I say this is the main reason to watch this movie, in addition to Sergio Leone's great shot selection with his DP and everything. And I realize directors don't necessarily choose shots, but Sergio Leone, we will attribute that to him.
Sure. And I would say watch this movie, the entirety of it, if you liked The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I think if you like that film and can handle Leone's style, then you will watch this and you will enjoy it. If you don't like that movie and you don't want to watch this movie for 3 hours, watch the opening 10 minutes, watch what the last 15 minutes, and you'll probably see some of the best chunks of the film, besides that train sequence, because the train sequence is really, really good. But those opening and closing things are phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really good. And I don't know. I mean, Some people say this is their favorite movie of all time. I know when I watched this originally years and years ago, I had tweeted about it or mentioned something on social media, and someone responded, yes, I watch this movie every single year at Christmas because it's one of my favorite movies to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see, I can really see how some people like this movie that much. I also can see how people are like, when it gets so long and when you have to draw things out, because the environment, I mean, somebody asked the other day, what, you know, I heard you guys do a top five on the top five good things about Kansas or whatever mm-hmm. that we did. You weren't involved in that, I don't
think.
No,
that's fine.
And it's probably a good thing because you'd be fired from your job as a...
I should probably know a lot, so much more about Kansas now.
Yeah, yeah. But someone said, you know, is it really worth visiting? And it's like, no, it's not. I mean, should I really come to Kansas?
No,
should I plan a trip to Kansas? And I was like, no. And he goes, but you had all these great things to say. And every time you guys talk about the university or the city that you live in, you have nothing but good things to say and how fun it is. Living in Kansas is like a Sergio Leone movie. It's like Once Upon a Time in the West. There are these moments where everything is brilliant. A mm-hmm. beautiful sunrise, a beautiful sunset, the largest ball of twine in the world, the largest hand-dug well.
What is the
Castle Rock.
The Barbed Wire Fence Museum.
The Barbed Wire Fence Museum. There's all these little wonderful things about Kansas.
Mm.
But in order to see all of these wonderful things, you have to spend a long, quiet time getting from one place to another. And that's what, I mean, Kansas is Once Upon a Time in the West is a great allegory for Kansas because mm-hmm. it's these great moments of brilliance throughout the state that are wonderful and you'll love every moment of them.
Yeah.
But there's also just this very slow, quiet pace mm-hmm. of everything that goes on.
Yeah, that is a really good analogy for what Kansas is because there are, like amazing things about Kansas.
Yeah.
I think like the cosmosphere.
Yeah, the cosmosphere.
Like, you're not
going
to find
fantastic.
That stuff anywhere in the world. But
except at NASA.
Well, I mean, they have all the NASA original stuff, like lunar modules are in Kansas. But you're right. If you live, especially where we live, like Hutchinson is
two and a half hours away. Yeah.
Especially if you take back roads, it's like, mm-hmm. there's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
And you go all
and
these other great places.
If you're trying to get to Denver, and many of our listeners have traveled through Kansas to get to Denver.
Sure.
And that last third of the state that's the area we live in.
Yeah.
We love it here. But that last third of the state is just
is
really
brutal.
Boring.
Especially when you have to do like the first third of Colorado right after it. Super boring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that is Kansas. There's these great moments. And especially in this movie, but there's these long, if you want to watch the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
the great thing about movies is that you can just fast forward. You can't fast forward when you're driving, is that you can enjoy these things, but you probably have a better appreciation for them if you take that time and wait two mm-hmm. and a half hours before you get that great harmonica flashback.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It'd be a fun game to play. Like, what quality of each state is each movie? Like, not like what movie is based in that state.
No, no, but
like what movie...
Well, yeah,
state.
You know, the Sweetwater would be the largest hand dug well in the state of Kansas, right? Because there's your water thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, this hole in the rock thing where they go and have that weird sexual encounter, that would be Topeka, right? I mean, it's just this awful place, this awful place where nothing good happens.
That's really funny if you're from Kansas.
But overall, as long as this movie is, and I enjoy it and I appreciate it, I still have to give this a thumbs up because the more I talk about it, the more excited I get about it.
Isn't that the weird thing? I think like when we talked about it yesterday, I was like, man, that movie was okay.
Yeah, it was just all right.
You give it a week though, when you talk about it.
Yeah,
and this movie's wonderful.
It is. It really is wonderful, and I feel sorry for some people who decided not to watch this movie because they're missing out. I really think people are missing out. And here's the other thing. This movie is part of a trilogy of movies. So while you have the Dollars trilogy, you also have the Once Upon a Time trilogy. And
there's
so I didn't know that there were three of them. It's called The Duck You Sucker. And it's about the Mexico-Spain war for their independence. And it's supposed to be real good. I've never seen it before. I didn't know that it was part of the trilogy. It's by Leone.
Duck You Sucker. What a weird title.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's supposed to be something else.
I can imagine.
But the other one that I would really recommend you check out, Zach, is if you like this movie, certainly go see Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
But you really, really ought to see Once Upon a Time in America. Once Upon a Time in America follows these two friends as they immigrate to the United States as young boys and as they rise up through the ranks mm-hmm. of the mafia. And
that's so weird.
It is really good because it's got Robert De Niro in it. It's got Pacino in it. It's basically really? Like a very different take on The Godfather almost. It's really, really good.
Man, that seems such like a weird shift to me.
I think it's
like
got Joe Pesci in it.
I've only seen Leone do these two Westerns, which are these iconic Western movies. And you're like, you know what he also did? He also did a mafia movie. I'm like, that'd be like, you know what and George
it,
Lucas
I mean,
always...
It, I mean, it starts in like the 1920s and goes to the 1970s.
It's like you told me, like, George Lucas, he also did a rom-com.
Yeah,
like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
He also did Howard the Duck. Yeah, Once Upon a Time in America stars Robert De Niro, James Woods, Elizabeth McGovern, Joe Pesci, Burt Young, Tuesday Weld, Treat Williams, Danny Aiello. I thought it had what's his name in it, but I guess it doesn't. But man, if you want to see a good mafia movie that really explores like a large generation of time,
mm-hmm.
It's only 100. Let's see, what is it? It is 3 hours. Oh, this is the 5 hour
movie. Isn't
this
a long
one? It's 3 hours and 49 minutes.
Oh,
it is definitely worth breaking into two parts because there is a different part of here's when we're young,
yeah,
and then the second half is here's when we're old.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's so worth watching.
That's so long.
But it's 3 hours and 49.
That's longer
minutes.
Than Ben-Hur.
I think we should watch it for next week.
No, we're gonna not do an epically long one.
So
next
let me
week.
Ask you a question then.
Yeah.
What have you learned about watching all of these quote unquote Westerns that were released in 1969? The Wild Bunch.
Yeah.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Midnight
yeah.
Cowboy. Easy Rider and Once Upon a Time in the West.
I think
I'm classifying them all as Westerns or this cowboy theme.
Well, yeah,
going through.
I definitely think the theme that I like, and especially if you look at the Western specifically, and they're definitely in Midnight Cowboy, Easy Rider as well, is that what I never really liked about the Western movies is mm-hmm. how confident all these people were in mm-hmm. who they were. Like, we are the good guys. We
right, right.
will last forever.
Right, right.
We're better right, than you. Right. You probably some racist word. And then when you get in these movies from 69 is guys that have like a strong faith in who they are,
mm-hmm.
but realize like, I'm not going to be able to live this way the rest of my life. Like, I'm either going to stay this, I'm going to be just like non-important to the rest of
mm-hmm.
the story,
mm-hmm.
or I'm going to have to adapt and change and do something else. And I like that they have to figure this out of, oh, I can't be this person that I thought I was because I'm not going to survive. There's no place for me
right.
in this new world if I keep with these same ideas on how I should live my life and what's the best way to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that weird angst that wasn't, like in the
so
forefront,
they all should be
always
black and mascara.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like that's what that was in the 69. It's like that's
right.
what they were putting in these movies, and because they were taking this big, I mean, the American cowboy is like
mm-hmm.
the thing, right?
Right,
like,
right?
That's like the most American thing
yeah.
ever. And then they were showing like, yeah, but America's not that anymore,
mm-hmm.
and these people can't be that anymore because that life is no longer really a viable option in this new world that we live in. And, you know, you're talking about space travel and Vietnam and the war and like all of these things were happening in the country, and they put it into such an iconic American character, I think made Westerns really good. I mean,
yeah,
we've watched, I think surprisingly, think about it, like a lot of Westerns.
We have. And that's the one thing. And again, when this series started, I was like, man, you know, when I was young, I really hated Westerns.
Yeah.
And then something tripped in my mind, and I think it was somewhere around Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where it just made sense. And
yeah.
as I've started to explore them more, it's actually kind of a fun genre to explore, but I think you have to be very selective when you look at Westerns. Because
yeah.
if you're looking at stuff and you think Westerns are only John Wayne, then yeah, you're probably going to be very spoiled and turned off by the Western
mm-hmm.
Because of what, I mean... And again, this will probably make a lot of people angry, but what John Wayne represents, if you watch like interviews with John Wayne where he's talking about equality or you see him talking
yeah.
and, you know, his dealings with actors who were quote unquote communist sympathizers.
Right, yeah, we talked about that.
He's a real dick. So that mm-hmm. can really spoil your view on the Western and your enjoyment of the Western,
mm-hmm.
especially when it's always the good guy wins and rides off into the sunset with the girl. Good guy doesn't always win. And
mm-hmm.
we see that in these movies where the heroes that we like or the... I shouldn't say heroes, the protagonists mm-hmm. of these stories more often than not die. Cheyenne dies. The Wild Bunch dies. Easy Rider dies. Mm-hmm. I mean, Peter Fonda, Henry Fonda in this. So Peter Fonda dies in Easy Rider. Ratso Rizzo dies in Midnight Cowboy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, life is not always great. Mm-hmm. And I think when you explore those kinds of Westerns, I think you find some very interesting things. Now, there is a movie, a John Wayne movie that came out in 69, which we haven't watched, which is True Grit, which lot of people say that's a huge turnaround for John Wayne as far as his portrayal of cowboys. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion is don't watch that version of True Grit. Watch the Coen Brothers version of True Grit, because I think that one is much, much better. Mm. That's just my opinion. Other people can use the comment section at majorspoilers.com and agree or disagree on that. But that's another Western that came out in 69 that we didn't look at here. Mm-hmm. I'd be more than happy to do it if you want to continue on this Western theme. But I think you're right in that here we are really taking a different approach to what's it mean to be a cowboy? What does it mean to be a man? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be? And again, if we think about what these movies are representing, times they are a-changing for all of these characters, right? What's going on in 69? The times they are a-changing, mm-hmm. right? So not only are the cowboys and the Westerns reevaluating their place in the 1800s, but here we have people 50 years later, 60 years later, whatever it is, 80 years later in the 1960s, also questioning, what's my place in this world?
Right.
And I would imagine that if you jump forward another 60 years, another generation, you would see right around now a lot of other movies that are popping up where people are really questioning their place in this really weird changing world.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And that's what I really liked about this entire chunk of 69. It was a quality year for film, Stephen. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a lot of good ones that came out.
There are some really bad ones that came out.
Well, we're not going to watch those, though, so I'm going to think that 69 was a great list.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure, and if I double-check, I'm pretty sure that all the movies that we have watched in the 69 series are all on the list. Not on my list, but on the
100.
On the, not on the top, not on my 100 list, but on the government's list of films that
dope
belong
movies
on the Preservation Society stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, certainly.
The Historical Registry or whatever it's called,
mm-hmm. Next week, we won't be in 69. We'll figure out something else. But that's a mystery, listeners.
It's a mystery.
But in the meantime, head over to majorspoilers.com, where you can find this podcast posting page and give your thoughts on is True Grit with John Wayne really that good? Or if you've watched Once Upon a Time in the West, giving your thoughts about that film there or anything we talked about on this podcast episode. While you're there, click on that Amazon.com link where you can buy a new case for your iPhone 7.
Wow,
you lucky. When you use that link, it's not going to cost you any extra, but a little bit will come back to Major Spoilers so we can keep podcasts like this coming up each and every week right into your podcast playing device. Steven, tell them about the Patreon.
Oh, Patreon. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to see it continued, or you got some kind of an enjoyment out of it, and you're like, wow, I feel like I have stolen from these people by listening to this fine content.
Yeah.
I real feel like I should pay them something for this weekly entertainment that we've been doing week after week. You can do that by heading over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can sign up for a set amount like the 2, 5, 10, 25, or 40. Those come with specific rewards. Or you might be like some of our fine patrons who are like, you know what? You guys deserve $100 a month
for
the work that you do. Some people might be saying, well, you know, I get enjoyment out of this, but I think it's only worth $1 or $2 a month.
Like
that's perfectly okay.
$4.50.
What's the cost of a movie ticket? Sign up for $6.72. That's what you can do for a movie matinee, and you can support this show for an entire month. Head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers.
Thank you for that. And next week, we will be back with more movie talk on Zach on Film.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.